Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hour conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you at River Mountain Watch. Call River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainer, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Call River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is the 18th day of July, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room where the initial topic for the evening is the Moran Convention has begun. And a tiny little statement, great big truth. We may have to suspend Titanic Tuesday, prayer meeting Wednesday, and Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, I don't know. I don't know about Thorn in the Side Thursday because that's when they wrap that. That's when they wrap their clavern up. But yeah, oh my God, we're going to be. Remember that everything's a movie line, isn't it, Bob? Yes, it is. Remember the original Ghostbusters and I've been slimed. Well, the country is getting slimed for the next 4 days. And I got a feeling it's going to be even worse than anything that happened in that movie. Oh, my God. But anyway, if you want to, the chat room topic, the Moran Convention has begun. And if you'd like to jump into the chat room, feel free to go over to headonradionetwork.com. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And jump right in, and you will be there in the company of Lady Suki, Steve from Georgistan, and longtime and veteran indefatigable chat room moderators, Body and Sparky, who being a third stage navigator, has in fact this evening, this afternoon for him, folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, indeed. It's a little, maybe we'll be a little bit slow getting going. Yeah, there it is. There it is. But we will get going. Yes, the RNK, the Republican National Clavern. Thank you very kindly, Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker, who says, "You're on and I'm on time." Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is Moran Monday on the Horn for this, the 18th day of July. 2016. Everybody's. Oh, okay. The real line, and I can count on Marty for these things. The actual line from Ghostbusters was not "I've been slimed." It was "He slimed me." So we'll just modify that this week to "They slimed us." Yeah. Yeah. All right then. Everybody wanting to get in on the gig. Scott in San Diego says, "Loud and clear here in San Diego via my steam-powered modified Atari console. You may be sued for gimmick infringement by Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver." And those international cross-border lawsuits can be messy, Scott. Messy, messy, messy. Yes. So, about this time Friday, we were all kind of wondering what the was going on in Turkey. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, did I mention that this is a listener-supported program? It is, and we're in a hole. We've got, and a little program note, okay? Let's take, just so you'll know, let's take next week, let's take a look at the calendar for next week. The calendar for next week involves me being away some. For starters, I have... For starters, I have I'm gonna deep throat a garden hose on Tuesday the 26th. I have an endoscopy scheduled, which means I will be out of my mind on heavy duty narcotics pretty much all day and sleeping it off all night. 25th is okay. 27th looks good. 28th and 29th gone. I've got once a year, my last remaining sister comes up to visit, and the 28th and 29th, I'll be away from the microphone. So there we go. Just, you know, please make a note of it. So next week is a two-day broadcast week, the 25th, more in Monday, and the 27th, and Agnes will probably chase me down if I try to get anywhere near the microphone. As deeply under the influence as I'm probably going to be. So that means somewhere along the way, in order to keep up with July, and in order to beat the Swede, we need to tack $600 onto this week's fundraising, plus the $200 we're in the hole. That's 18. Oh, Jesus, why couldn't it be something divisible by 5? Okay. Just one second here. So it works out. We need to raise $360 a night for the next 5 nights. Okay. And then the regular 2 nights of next week will be just regular. But, yeah, so that's where we stand. 10 at 36, 1 at 360, 36 at 10, 2 at 180, et cetera. But the ordinarily, I mean, when you get right down to it, the hole would be $400 this evening anyway. So we know how that would... No, it would not be a good show, Lady Suki. It would not be a good show with me wasted on heavy-duty narcotics. Plus, I have a standing promise never to do Limbaugh Radio. Mm-hmm. Now, what was I saying? Okay, if you want to help out, the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Like I said, when we were talking on Friday, we were wondering what was going on in Turkey. And then I guess their coup sort of fizzled with bloodshed and killing. But nonetheless, it caused me to think that, you know, we know very, very little about that little corner. It's a round planet, for God's sakes. For that little hunk of real estate. That hunk of very, very valuable, very, very strategic real estate, whereat sits the city now known as Istanbul. And with that in mind, we're going to sort of pause any discussion of Morans. We're going to pause our discussion of Baton Rouge. And we're going to go back to Friday, and we're going to talk a little bit about that corner of the world, because I got a feeling we're not done hearing about it. And in order to carry on that conversation, Eugene will be new to many of you, to some not. Eugene Finnerman is a man I have referred to in the past and continue to refer to as the world's most brilliant internet satirist. Finnermanworks.com is his website. He keeps up with this date and history sorts of stuff and has a particular expertise for that particular parcel of real estate and the 1,000 years, we tend to forget that, of the Roman Empire at what was then Constantinople, and who considered themselves Romans. So with that all having been said, let me fire things up here and bring Eugene on board. Eugene, are you there?
I am indeed.
I am Hello, so Bob. Glad you are. It's been so very long, Eugene, since we've talked. I hope you're well.
I am.
Good.
How are you?
Doing pretty good, I think. I guess we can all take breathe a bit of a sigh of relief that Turkey did not collapse into chaos, because that would not be good for the world, would it?
No. No. We prefer it to be a corrupt, you know, but strong entity. When you refer to it, that little corner of the world, it's really not little. Take a look on the map.
No,
it's quite
Turkey's
large.
Big, big, big. I mean, a big hunk of Asia Minor, birthplace of civilization, forging of iron. No, there's a lot to it.
Definitely the forging of iron seems to, you know, originated there, the Hittites. But they were, that actually predates the Turks. The Turks are relative newcomers to that area.
Well, they are. I mean, the whole area was settled, of course, for people who don't know, where we think Troy was.
Is
in the what is considered the Turkish mainland.
Yes, and indeed, the area would be considered, you know, historically, just in terms of, you know, Sicilia. You know, which would also correspond to roughly the area of Troy. I mean, we're talking about 3,000 years.
Yes.
Bear in mind, what we would consider Greece was today is barely a third of what the Greeks would consider part of their, you know, what the Romans refer to, you know, Magna Graecia. I mean, it extended as far west as Sicily and southern Italy, and to as far east, you know, before Alexander, to certainly Anatolia, western Turkey.
Ephesus, places like that, yes.
Absolutely. As Greek as Athens and Sparta. Then later, of course, you know, and there were outposts in, you know, the Crimea, Sevastopolis originally, just as Naples was Neapolis.
Polis being the Greek word for city. Right.
And sad to say, also in the news, Nice was originally Nike.
Mm-hmm. Nicaeum.
The city of victory. Not really a city, but named for the god, you know, the outpost of victory.
Yeah, it started out as a Roman oppidum.
But it was, before the Romans, it was Greek. The Greeks in Nice.
Oh, true. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it was not a major Greek settlement the way Sicily was and southern Italy, but it was a Greek outpost. We digress. Of course, tangents are my chief form of my primary language. My train of thought is frequently derailed.
That's okay. Mine often has no wheels at all, so don't worry about it, Eugene.
We were talking about, you know, the situation in Turkey. It's interesting. I mean, what we would the Turkey we know, you know, dates only back literally to 1922. Strangely enough, the Ottoman Empire in a truncated state still survived World War I. The Allies were intent on keeping the Sultan around, if only as a puppet.
And for what? A couple of hundred years, the British had been referring to the Ottoman Empire as the sick man of Europe. Was that?
Only 100 years.
Okay.
But yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. They were propping it up, really as a barrier against Russian expansion.
Because the Tsar
Russia had this cultural and political fixation that it was the heir to Constantinople, which, culturally speaking, it was.
Yeah, and I mean the Tsarist eagle is the eagle that flew over Constantinople in its prime.
That is correct.
Before May the 29th, 1453.
The Russians didn't dare call themselves czars until Constantinople fell. They knew that they were not the rightful emperors while there was still someone reigning in Constantinople.
So
once Constantinople fell, then the Grand Prince of Moscow could, you know, take upon himself the title of, you know, czar, emperor.
Caesar.
But before then, he didn't dare. He had a sense of deference.
So there is, I mean, you know, there's a thousand years of Roman history that because people read Gibbon and they go, oh, okay, Rome fell in 476. Well, you know, Dark Ages. But that's not true.
Not at all.
There was a thousand years of high culture, a thousand years of stunning achievement, a thousand years of East meets West, melding and merging including Justinian, Alexis Comnenus, all the way to the very last Constantine of May the 29th, 1453.
Well, unfortunately, the last 200 years of Byzantine history are a sad vestige of Byzantine glory. It wasn't the Turks who destroyed Constantinople, it was the Crusaders in the 1204. The city had been until 1204, the Byzantines were declining after a series of terribly inept emperors, but it was not irreversible. You know, they still controlled much of the Balkans, Western Turkey, as we would call it. But they were not, you know, it was an attack by, you know, led by the Venetians on Constantinople that ravaged the city. It was still the greatest city in Christendom, with a population of 200,000.
And when the Crusaders descended upon them, the Crusaders were quite literally unwashed Western barbarians, Franks,
some
Gauls.
The Venetians were more sophisticated because they were, in a way, a rebellionist satellite of the Byzantines. The Byzantines had secondhand Byzantine sophistication because at one point they had been the colony of Constantinople and then the satellite. Much like Russia, the Prince of
right.
Kiev, you know, these were one of the few places considered worthy of a Byzantine princess. You know, a Doge of Venice could marry a Byzantine princess. A Grand Duke, one of the Grand Dukes of Russia, of Kiev and Rus, could marry a Byzantine princess. Practically everyone else was unworthy.
Exactly. And so the, you know, whether it be the Teutonic Knights or the Crusade of Peter the Hermit or any of the other disaster, you know, the Venetians were served a certain transportational function, being a maritime city state.
The Crusades were an economic boon to the Italians because they were providing, just ironically, as Byzantine commerce was receding, the Italians were picking up the slack. And indeed, in an attempt at privatizing, a Byzantine emperor thought he could save money by basically entrusting the Genoese to handle, you know, Byzantine naval problems rather than maintain his own navy. I mean, in the short run, he was saving money, but at the same time, he was sacrificing any navy.
Yeah, penny-wise and empire foolish.
Yes, very well put. And so there was no navy to protect Constantinople when the Crusaders descended upon it.
So all of that being the case, there is a history, Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure you can get into it and pretty easily. Since there was an attempted coup my Turkish pronunciation is null.
It's tricky because it looks like Erdogan, but it's Erdogan.
Erdogan, and I got no idea what to do with the squiggle under the C. Is it the same thing as the squiggle under the C in French? I mean, it. Recep Erdogan.
First off, the Turkish alphabet that we know of is relatively new. It dates back to the great, you know, attempts at westernizing the country by Kemal Ataturk. You know, you know, before that they had sort of a mix of Arabic and Persian as their alphabet. They imposed a Romanized alphabet on it. They have like 29 letters in their alphabet, So like C's and G's are two separate letters. G with a cedilla, G without a cedilla. C with a cedilla, C with a cedilla.
Otherwise known as the little squiggle, yes, because...
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a
you know.
Because I'm a hillbilly, Eugene. I'm, come on.
Okay, and, you know, the... anyway, but so I, you know, it's a tricky print. I want to say Erdogan, but then I actually when I see the Spanish J, I want to pronounce it Jorge instead of Jorge. So what can I say?
Right, exactly.
I'm a Midwesterner, so you know.
And moreover, we're both Merkins. So foreign languages are, well, not the strong suit of this country. But to say the least, the attempted coup against President Erdogan is only the latest, not just in Turkish history, but to the extent that particular incredibly valuable area of real estate is also prone to earthquakes, the shaky geology of the region appears to translate into the politicality of the area as well. Lots of we'd call them coups, no small number of Byzantine emperors met less than pleasant ends. Is that not correct?
That was actually one of the few Roman traditions they maintained. you know, the Byzantines were actually relatively bloodless that way. I mean, there were dynasties that actually lasted several generations. By comparison, there were 80 emperors in 500 years in Rome, so that gives some idea of the longevity. But the Byzantines did have there were cases of murder, there were cases of mutilation. If you simply blind the emperor, that also makes him ineligible to continue. Or literally defacing, cutting off his nose.
If you felt
that as a good Christian, good Orthodox Christian, you should not kill, you know, someone you just usurped, you could simply cut off his nose. The real purges began, in the Ottoman history, later Ottoman history, you know, where emperors sultans were frequently overthrown. The early days, the heyday of the empire, the sultans had a charming habit of murdering, upon ascending the throne, you murdered your brothers.
Well, the man who took Constantinople, Mehmet II, did exactly that, did he not?
It was a proud tradition, there was a ritual. You did not spill imperial blood. So that's why they were strangled. You had to have your brothers strangled, otherwise,
or rolled up in a rug and stomped.
Generally, the strangling with a bowstring was the tradition.
Well, there is a history of iconoclasm there as well.
No, it lacked dignity. You wanted them to have a martial ending, and being strangled with a bowstring would qualify. Now, by the 17th century, the emperors started getting. Well, the emperors couldn't stop ruling themselves, leaving the work to their viziers, so you had, in their decadence, that fine line between, virtue and, atrophy, they let their brothers live. So, of course, then their brothers could plot against them, and so you frequently had the so-called elite corps, the Janissaries.
I had a feeling we were going to get to them.
And choosing who'd be the next, the equivalent of the Turkish Praetorians, picking who would be the next sultan. And that happened actually with great regularity. And indeed, until 1908, the last coup was in 1908, when the fittingly named Abdul the Damned was overthrown. Although he wasn't murdered, he was allowed to basically sail off to a luxurious exile. But coups were very common in the Ottoman, in the last half of the empire. Now, things didn't improve with one emperor over the next, but there was no, you, at least you had a variety of incompetence. Hello?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No.
Okay.
Go right ahead, because the issues that you're describing, that you mentioned the Janissaries, where did they come from?
Well, the origins of the Janissaries is quite fascinating. Originally, they were children exacted as taxes from Christian villages, you know, to be raised as Muslim soldiers with no purpose but to serve the Sultan. And they became the elite shock troops of the Ottoman Empire in its, you know, glory days.
But just as the Praetorian cohort became kingmakers in the western end of Rome, by the time the same sort of plague was visited on the Sultans, was it not?
Absolutely. In fact, there was even a symbol for rebellion. The Janissaries would turn over their kettles where they would normally get their, you know, meals. If, you know, talk about, you know, food fights, they literally would turn over their kettles of, you know, rations to show that they were in rebellion.
So, consequently, you'd feed them well, pay them well, but...
Yes, placate them well.
Exactly. And you know, the reason I'm asking you about all of this, Eugene, is because while we want to see Turkey as a modern nation state, and to a certain extent it is, it is certainly as stable or more than virtually any other Muslim country in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There is very much of the ancient about Istanbul, Constantinople, and the Turkish state as well. I don't necessarily mean a slur by saying that. That there is much inside of the modern Turkey that still partakes of the ancient world.
Well, it hasn't changed its location, so it hasn't lost its relevance.
Exactly. And when it comes to politics, you know, there were, in the last 50 years, there were three and a half coups. And so once again, in the case of President Erdogan, I tried to do some digging into the background of where the coup came from. And I guess there's a purge on now. Those aren't new either, are they?
Well, the purge, in his case, particularly not. He's a demagogue with tyrannical tendencies, even though, you know. I mean, he's throwing out judges. I mean, and some people, you know, have compared this to the Reichstag fire, where you take an incident and use it to basically, you know, seize further power. And so by his overhaul and purges of the judiciary... Is certainly an overreach. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's going to, you know, but it's certainly a seizure of power that, you know, is not justified by the actual coup. As far as the coup was concerned, it was strictly a summer stock production. He'd already done serious eradication of the Turkish high command over, you know, he's been in power since about, well, 2003, first as prime minister, and he's been, in effect, culling the generals and, you know, having show trials of them, so that what's left of the Turkish army is really just, you know, sycophants in uniform. It came as a surprise there was any serious resistance to him here.
And that's a little worrisome because, among other things, the people who came out into the streets to resist came out as a result of calls from the mosques.
Yes.
Because he is an Islamic fundamentalist of sorts.
He has proven himself to be. I mean, when he was the mayor of Constantinople, he wasn't that way. But he has created, you know, as he's expanded into the national stage... He has made alliances and reinvented himself as a friend of the fundamentalists. In some ways, he's the anti-Turk rather than the Ataturk.
One of the things I found most fascinating is that the accusation was immediately made from his administration that the coup was secretly fomented by an imam who lives in the Poconos.
Well,
now, that itself is a setup to a joke to begin with.
Islam and the Quakers is, you know, goes back so long. Yes, Pennsylvania, that hotbed of Islamic fundamentalism. Actually, there was an original Philadelphia, and, you know, but that was in Jordan. That was what Amman's name originally was when it was part of the Hellenized world.
Exactly.
But I digress again.
It's one long digression, Eugene. Don't worry.
Yes. Well, I mean, I have more footnotes than a centipede. But the I would say yes, he's looking for scapegoats, and that was just his nature. The people who plotted against him, obviously, well, they knew how vicious he could be, and they're sort of going to find out. He wants to be modeled in history and as another Ataturk, but as I say, he's the anti-Turk, because he's creating alliances with the Islamic fundamentalists, whereas the original Ataturk was a secularist. And also he's trying to reestablish Turkey as the, or at least the Ottoman Empire in its influence over Syria, over northern Iraq, and as a power, it does have
and to keep and
could
to keep
theoretically
the,
do it
and to keep the Kurds at bay.
Oh yes, the fixation with the Kurds. Yes. Well, it's interesting. The Kurds have been around. Well, I remember Xenophon talking about what a nuisance they were. Of course, he was just trying to cross their territory. But so the Kurds have been are not a new phenomenon. We're talking about 400 BC. So, yes, the Kurds have been trying to assert themselves as a state for that period of time. And they have... I mean, there wasn't even much of a provision made for them among even the most benevolent people at Versailles when they were dividing up.
And benevolent people at Versailles were, you know, sort of a rarity.
Well, their competence was, you know, the few in Turkey. When they divided up Turkey, they did actually make allowances for a separate Armenian state. And they actually assigned Western Turkey to Greece, which demographically could have been justified. But that, as far as the Turks were concerned, the nationalist Turkish nationalists was the last straw. That was the founding of the Turkish Republic. While the Sultan was under British influence in Constantinople, signing away and agreeing to everything that had been determined by... the diplomats in Paris.
Because he backed the wrong horse in the First World War.
Ataturk was a hero. He was the hero of Gallipoli.
No. I mean the Sultan.
Well, that particular Sultan was actually... his name was... The last Sultan of the Ottoman Empire was Mehmed VI, replacing his incompetent brother Mehmed V.
Back to the problem of brothers letting brothers live.
Yeah, well, by that time, absolutely, it didn't matter anymore. And Mehmed V had been succeeded his incompetent and thoroughly decadent. I'm not sure the relationship with Abdul Hamid. I don't think it was a brother; might have been an uncle, but the one who would reign for 30 years and then was overthrown in 1908 by the Young Turks. You know, we're hoping to reform Turkey, save the Ottoman Empire.
Turkey kicking and screaming into modernity.
Turkey was massacring Armenians.
But
that's all they really did.
Well, all of that having been said, Eugene.
Yes.
Can you take does your historical understanding of the region provide any insights going forward? I mean, was this, like you said, it was strictly summer stock, but still, when seeing political upheaval in that part of the world at this time in the world, is not reassuring. Any guesses going forward?
Well, we can, again, looking to the past, we have Turkey, we have the successors of the Crusaders in the West, we have the successors of the Byzantines, the Russians. So in a way, the players are still the same. You know, when the Byzantines, and actually there are parallels too, because when the Byzantines asked the Crusaders for help, the Crusaders materialized in overwhelming numbers and then proceeded to attack the wrong enemy. They were attacking the moderate Arab, you know, emirates, not the Turks that the Byzantines had wanted to fight.
And alongside all of this, throughout history, you have the shifting alliances and leaderships in the Muslim armies that put pressure both on the Byzantines, but also later put pressure on the Sultans. And that has arisen as well, has it not? I mean, isn't that what ISIS is, Daesh?
The ISIS, oh gee, it's hard. ISIS is so strange. I mean, you could also go back and look for parallels in the Assassins. You know, that they were the original terrorist group in the Islamic world.
Preceded, you know, only by the Sakari, you know, a few hundred years earlier.
Yes, yes, they were contemporary with the Crusades, but yes, they were more socially conscious. They would have killed the Cardassians rather than mass murder. I mean, they knew, they went through the society pages. They knew who to kidnap, who to murder. So they did have a certain finesse. And finally, you saw an alliance between, well, actually it was the Mongols who took care of them. Finally, an alliance between the moderate Arabs and the Mongols that, you know, finally crushed the Assassins in the 13th century. But ISIS, it's hard to say. I mean, first off, you've got, as I say, when you talk about the war between the Shiites and the Sunnis, you're actually going back to the conflict between the Persians and the Arabs, the other great state of the Middle East. There's always been a Persian or Iranian entity, you know, since the Babylonians. Yes, they periodically get destroyed, but, you know, the Alexanders and, you know, the Genghis Khans and the, you know, Byzantines and
Mark Antony's.
Mark Antony was never a success with the Persians.
They completely destroyed him. Well, not completely, but
Antony destroyed himself. There were a number of Roman armies that were destroyed by the Persians, one of their predecessor states,
the Parthians.
There was a Roman emperor who was actually captured by the Persians, Valerian the First. He was captured and then used as the emperor's, or the Shah's, and they used that word, Shah's, footstool during his captivity. And when Valerian died, he was stuffed and mounted. And an early Persian attempt at Disneyland.
Welcome to the Hall of Emperors.
Exactly.
And even Caesar's dear buddy.
Well, if you're talking about Cassius. Crassus.
You're talking about Crassus.
Crassus, the Donald Trump of his day, you know, knew how to make money at other people's expense.
Literally. And therefore they gave him an army to play with.
They gave him an army to play with, and he lost it, along with himself.
Is it true, or was it simply Roman propaganda that the Parthian king remarked upon Crassus's insatiable thirst for gold and therefore set out to quench it with the liquid variety thereof.
I don't know if that part's true. I don't think, I mean, Crassus was not captured alive. I know that actually that's what, interestingly enough, happened to some captured Spaniards in the 16th century by the Aztecs. Literally pouring gold down their throats. But the...
Because Caesar was setting out to avenge Crassus's defeat at the hands of the Parthians when that particular March morning in 44 BC rolled around.
Yes.
He had to go to the meeting of the Senate because he was leaving day after tomorrow or whatever.
Well, it could have been indignant calendar makers too. Don't forget that. But the the Romans did actually score some victories over the Parthians. Trajan, actually successfully marched through. You know, so there were Roman victories, but they just did enough to... The Parthians were significant enough to be a constant nuisance and danger to the Romans, at least in places like Syria, but not a real threat to the empire itself. They were a threat to Syria, but not, in Asia Minor, Judea, but Italy itself, there was no danger, whereas when the Romans were on the march, they literally could sack the major cities of Parthia.
So, I mean, the purpose to all of this is to kind of create a tableau, if you will, of... I've remarked on this program a number of times, Eugene, that we are cursed by our own short lifespans. And we tend to see everything that happens as, oh my God, this is the biggest, oh my God, this is the worst, oh my God, this is the... And you know, the 20th century can lay claim to some of that, but in the grand scope of the march of so-called civilization, the place that we're talking about now has been a crossroad of the clash of ideologies, clash of lifeways, that goes back as far as what we, whatever it was that the Trojan War was.
Well, I agree. I mean, certainly when you talk about the Byzantine Empire, where they held and where they lost are the marks between Christendom and Islam, as well as, the Cold War, where they held and, where they were, outmarketed by Rome, the Church of Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. Those are the, the borders of, in a way, the Cold War. So, I mean, nothing is new under the sun.
Your book.
Occasionally they change, the technology changes, but the characters, when Francis Fukuyama, with the fall of the Soviet Union said, this is the end of history. I felt, no, we're just going to go, this is the end of one phase of it, but we're going to go back to the earlier grudges that the Cold War simply, dramatized. But we'll go back to, to the wars in the Balkans, which were also Rome versus Constantinople. That's exactly what happened.
And shortly after the Turks took Constantinople, which they memorialize in their flag to this day, it was the beginning of the end of the Muslim incursion into Europe, because they would crash against the gates of Vienna in not too long a span of time, and begin eventually receding to the point where we understand the modern religious demarcations of Eastern Europe.
Well, bear in mind the Turks held Hungary for over a century. When Constantinople fell, the Turks had already gained control of Greece and Bulgaria. much of what we would consider, you know, I'm old enough to say Yugoslavia.
So, yes,
you know,
right.
But you know, Serbia and the, you know, Croatia, not Croatia but Serbia, they would move up and take Croatia and then Hungary. In the early 17th century, the Turks were still strong enough that they could, they defeated the Habsburgs in a war, and all during the 30 Years' War, the Habsburgs were still paying. Well, they were fighting to crush Protestantism in Europe, at least in Germany. They were still paying tribute to Turkey, to the Ottomans. So, I mean, bear in mind, so that, you know, maybe mainly to placate their southern borders, you know, they, southern and eastern borders, because if you're, you know, if you're trying to take Saxony, you don't want suddenly a Turkish army to materialize in Austria.
Right, and if you're Austria-Hungary, you'd kind of like to have access to the Black Sea, the Bosporus, the world.
Well, that's what the heirs of Constantinople and the North wanted. Bear in mind, they, you know.
And somehow or another, we've managed to have this conversation and not even bring up the Vikings.
Well,
such a fun lot.
That's a sore point with the Russians, because they hate to admit that the, you know, the Vikings in any way can, were the, you know, helped establish the Soviet state. But you're right, it was Viking princes who, in effect, coalesced these various Slavic tribe, Rurik, you know, taking the Slavic tribes of the, you know, along the Black Sea, and forming states, not very functional states, but, you know, states that were, you know,
literally close enough for government work.
It's strange that, and these were the Swedish Vikings, you know, we all are familiar with the exploits of the Danes and the Norwegians, I mean, changing the color scheme of Ireland and things like that, but the hair color, anyway.
That's why the orange is in that flag, isn't it?
Well, it sort of matches red, yes. I mean, the Celtic people do not normally have red hair, but those medieval SAS view, you know, tours were rather effusive in their contributions to gene pools. When they did a genetic testing of the English population, or the, you know, I was surprised that the Vikings didn't make more of an impression. I mean, the Anglo-Saxons were, you know, had, were certainly an overlay over what was still largely a Celtic population. And you would expect that, but the Danes did not make that much of an impression, even though they basically held Eastern England for a long time.
I think some of the genetics are still floating around, and there are, you know, there are plenty, there are no small number of both words and pronunciations within English.
Etymology. I mean, obviously, such charming terms as, you know, plunder and kidnap were contributed by the Vikings to the English language. So was the word window. You know, I've written about that. I do enjoy the English.
Which reminds me, I want people to be able to partake of your of your historical musings. Are you still doing dailies, or I mean?
No, of late, actually, I've been doing historical lectures. I've been teaching and doing historical lectures, and, you know, in the communities around where I live. Like for the New Year, I would be doing, you know, Happy New Year, but it's not the year you think, talking about, you know, the history of Anno Domini and how 2017 would be actually more likely 2021 or even 23, and talking about, you know, how long the church has known it made a mistake and how it tried to cover it up for centuries, sort of like a Dan Brown without the exciting car chases and, you know, beautiful heroines, but the fact that the story actually happened.
Right, exactly. But the website...
has some of the funniest Johannes Kepler jokes you'll ever hear.
I'll bet, because I just can't imagine there's a whole bunch of Kepler jokes out there.
Well, I didn't say I had much competition.
Right. I did, well, by default. But that being the case, the website is still live, and people can go wander around in it, can they not?
They are certainly welcome around. Find the latest in Byzantine humor, FinnermanWorks.com. Go for your RDA of irony. As I said, these days I have been spending a lot of time with working on the lecture series, like Veterans Day at the Movies I'll be delivering in November. Lectures as well as history lectures, because I do love the sound of my own voice. And wander from tangent to tangent the way
you
I
are.
Do.
You are still knocking down the occasional pint of ice cream, I trust.
Oh, daily. I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Daily.
Yeah, you're powerless over it.
I'm on the rowing machine watching Jeopardy, and, you know.
Yeah, because people, folks may not know, because we haven't reminded them, up until what year, you were the winningest Jeopardy champion ever?
I was never the winningest, although I certainly was one of the handsomest. Of the 19, you know, it's like saying I was the second best looking man of the 1918 Politburo. But,
Jesus,
you Eugene. Know, the Zenobia probably would have been the first in a, you know, Paul Rudman kind of cute way.
Right.
In 1987, I was a five-time winner in the days when that was the limit.
Yeah, if you won five times, you were gone.
I was gone. I was an undefeated champion. They had undefeated champions in those days. Then I came back to the Tournament of Champions, won my quarterfinal match, won my semifinal match, and in the finals, I learned to hate daily doubles.
Oh, burnt.
So, but I still was in third place, which was my minimum for vanity.
No, it's also the
and
minimum for Jeopardy.
And I get invited back to special tournaments.
Very nice. Very nice.
So, you know, it is my claim to fame. It will be on my epitaph. He was on Jeopardy. It impresses Ivy Leaguers. I mean, very little does, but being a champion on Jeopardy does. And
I get you a parade slot in Chicago, though, doesn't it?
No, not any. I'm not even the biggest winner in Chicago anymore. I'd be in like third. Well, once again, I find myself like in third place.
Jesus, Eugene. O tempores, o mores.
Well, it has been nearly 30 years, 29. You know, so I, you know, good God, there are now champions on Jeopardy who were born after I appeared. God, that's humiliating.
Well, but at least you don't go back to the Art Fleming days, so. Yeah.
No, but I do remember them. I used to, you know, watch it in grade school and definitely in high school, you know, during summer vacation. And then in college, I would arrange my class schedule so I never missed it.
So when you talk in your sleep, do you talk in the form of a question?
You'll have to ask my wife.
and you've sworn her to secrecy
No, she'll tell you. yes, I am, you know, the worst type of know-it-all, the type who actually does.
Exactly. And that's why I called on you, because I figured if I started walking off into Byzantine history, I would promptly fall off a cliff.
Well, we've been dealing with the Byzantines, the Turks. I mean, going from tangent to tangent, even 30 years war at least did pertain to the, paying off the Turks. Let's see. Did we miss anything? We didn't talk about Lawrence of Arabia.
No, he works into that at a distance, I suppose.
Yes, he does, but it does remain, to my mind, one of the best, you know, historical films ever made.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, what else? The God, everything, even the soundtrack. Wow.
Well, Lawrence of Arabia reference. So we were grilling out last night, and the neighbor Labrador Retriever comes over, and he's an old fella, and he gets better treatment over here than he does at the neighbors.
I'm sorry.
Well, he comes over, and he's our buddy, and So Agnes wanted chicken instead of the burgers that I was doing. So I did some chicken up in what is called speedy sauce. It's a New York thing. And Agnes looked at me and said, "Well, you know, give him a bite of my chicken. Boneless chicken breast, no bones, can't hurt him."
Yes, right.
So I cut off a piece of one of the chicken breasts, and he took it ever so gently from my fingers because he's a gentleman. And I turned to Agnes and said, "He says he likes your chicken." Straight out of
your Peter O'Toole imitation.
He says he likes your lemonade. My Peter O'Toole's not worth a damn, but yeah, the movie is always in the background. There's a bunch of movies that are always in the background for me, but that's one of them. That one and ow, that hurts. Of course it hurts. Well, what's the trick then? The trick, my dear boy, is not minding that it hurts. That's another one.
Yeah.
You know, when he was playing with the match.
I know. I remember. I mean, I've seen that film about 6 times.
Yep. I'm good for at least once or twice a year. Well, Eugene, I thank you very much for your time. And,
it is my pleasure. It's good talking to you. I apologize, you know, to the listeners for being a pedantic old man, but...
The world needs more pedantic old men, especially the ones who can deliver a laugh along with the.
That is my intention. You know.
Exactly. Well, have yourself a wonderful evening, and hopefully, you know, maybe we can do this again sometime, and the coup won't have fizzled by the time that we get to the conversation.
Well, again, the question is: will it be worse? Would the coup be worse than, you know, the cure be worse than the disease? That's the risk with coups.
Yeah, well, right, because you never know if maybe, you know, because there's always somebody, even if you're a religious maniac, there's always somebody out there who says, you know, he's going to hell. He's not nearly enough of a maniac. And you run that risk. Because, as you say, he's pretty much taken all the secular oomph out of the Turkish military, which had previously been, you know, a check on megalomaniacs and demagogues and what.
Well, it had been a check on demagogues and leftists. Now, but, you know, in a way, it hadn't anticipated, you know, fundamentalist loonies. It was, you know...
The curse of the modern age.
Yes.
Fundamentalist loonies. Eugene, have yourself
ironic,
a wonderful evening.
I mean, with modern technology, we can get back to the dark ages faster.
That's the that may be the takeaway of the evening. Yeah. Amazing, Eugene. Have a wonderful evening. We'll talk soon. My best to the lovely Karen. And
thank you so much. My regards also to Agnes. Anyway, thank you so much. Good, and thank again. And I'd like to thank your listeners for their sufferance.
I think they suffered less than you think they did.
I can only hope.
Take care,
Till
Eugene.
Then.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye.
The one and only Eugene Finnerman. Finnermanworks.com. Go and just have a wander at your leisure around your RDA of irony. You'll learn things you didn't know you didn't know. And that's one of the beautiful things about being exposed to people who really, 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 really know their particular history. And there ain't much Eugene Finnerman doesn't know. Finnerman Works, Finnerman. You might want to say Finerman, but it's not. It's Finnerman. Finnerman Works, Finnerman.com. So that having been said, that closes the first hour of the program. And did I mention it's Moran Monday? Because it's Moran Monday. So we will take a break, and I have had a communication from A. Nonny Mouse. And A. Nonny Mouse would like you to know that there is, in fact, a challenge to the tune of $100 on the table to help get us to the $360 a night that we need to raise this week. So your 10 becomes 20, 20, 40, 40, 80, et cetera, up to the next $100 that roll in. And thank you very, very, very kindly. Thank you also to Leo. Thanks very much, Leo. And thanks again to Randy in PA, who, by the way, is also responsible for the fact that you will no longer hear that annoying little beeping in the background. That got taken care of over the weekend with a battery replacement courtesy of Randy. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Thank you very, very much. Hopefully the stream has settled down now. Apparently a dog barked or a cat hissed at a Frontier wire somewhere between here and God knows where, and it was kind of dodgy there at the beginning, but it seems, like I said, to have settled down. So there is, in fact, a $100 challenge on the table, which will knock down fundraising if it is met for the evening, and we'll cross our fingers going forward. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is, you got it, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Constantinople, been a long time gone. Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, the Constantinople. So if you a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
So reach me back to Constantinople.
No, you can't
go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Istanbul.
Was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
You just liked it better that way.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, the Constantinople. Constantinople, why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Man, you saw that bumper coming from a mile away, didn't you? But there's never a bad time for They Might Be Giants. This is The Horn. More and Monday. Oh, wait. Hold on. Let's see. Well, okay. Quick to the email bag. There's no bag. Andy in the Netherlands with a note. Subject line, why the Erdogan situation is no good. Long story short, says Andy, but the Erdogan situation in Turkey is not much different to the Trump situation in the U.S. Trump supporters, as I understand it, are mostly thugs, and Erdogan supporters are too. I live in the Netherlands, and we've had a substantial Turkish immigrant population, and since the failed coup, the news has been full of reports of Erdogan supporters intimidating other Turks, including throwing rocks through people's windows, as well as creating a blacklist of supposed anti-Erdogan people. Anyway, I just read that a socialist politician over here is looking to deport Erdogan supporters. Things are getting weird. I'm pretty sure anything democratic about Turkey is gone now. Some Turks believe Erdogan staged the whole coup to usurp more power. I, says Andy, wouldn't doubt it. It was anything but clear. And interestingly, like I said early on, blame was placed on a man named Fatullah Gulen, which I am probably brutally mispronouncing. But the background on that man is more than a little bit fascinating. He's kind of reclusive. He lives in the Poconos. And he is an imam. He is deemed to be a radical, heretical Islamic leader, but not of the usual variety. He doesn't run around saying that anybody needs to have their heads cut off or, you know, the stuff that the mainstream, the royal, majestic, noble graciousness, our friends in Saudi Arabia, the serene royal house of Ibn Saud, do all the time. No, Fatullah Gulen says that, and he's Turkish, and he and Erdogan were once friends, but he declared that Erdogan was a power-hungry maniac, and they're not anymore. And in fact, the Turkish have tried him and convicted him in absentia in Turkey, and that's why he's in the Poconos. Talk about nobody's business but the Turks. But in the meantime, he has set up schools. That's his thing. More particularly, charter schools. There's hundreds of them, probably, in the U.S., and scores more in Turkey. And he declares that to be a good Muslim, one should learn science. To be a good Muslim, one should learn literature. To be a good Muslim, one should advance knowledge, which is really kind of humanistic when you get right down to it. But along the way, he has also enriched himself tremendously by getting charter school contracts, because that nightmarish vision of the privatization of American public education has a strong hold in certain parts of the country. In fact, there's a bunch of his charter schools are in, of all places, Texas. And along the way, apparently, they have imported English teachers who are actually physics teachers. But they bring them over here saying that, you know, they're here to learn English or some such, and then boom. And then they, apparently, from what I was able to learn, they have to give back 40% of their paycheck to Fatullah Gulen's organization and his lower-ranking lackeys and whatnot. Capitalism. Go figure. But by no means it probably in any other program would not have made the top of the program, but dadgummit, I'm fascinated with things like that. And heck, there'll be another massacre tomorrow or the day after. Right? And we can talk about that then. But along the way, over on my Facebook page, there was a long, seemingly endless discussion over the weekend of the Gotta Stop Trump forces versus forces, really. The Gotta Stop Trump camp versus the ideologically pure let's vote for the Greens who will win an election for the next 500 years faction. Well, out of the middle of it all, a couple of notes. One, coming from our buddy Matt in San Francisco. I've heard people bash Bernie and say he should never give up and needs to say damn the torpedoes and keep fighting until his last breath. I've heard others say the writing is on the wall, it's time to hold your nose and vote for Hillary. What I've not heard articulated is how I see it, so let me tell you what I think. Do, please, Matt. Bernie is a politician. Amen to that. He's been working within the halls of power for decades. He's been fighting the good fight and standing up against a constant barrage of entrenched power brokers his entire life. He reached a point where he looked around and saw that no one else was going to put their neck out there and challenge the political power structure of Mrs. Clinton, so he did it himself. He surveyed the landscape and surmised that the only logical path was to enter the Democratic Party and use that system in order to be on the ballot in all 50 states. He knew the advantages and drawbacks to that decision and agreed from the beginning that if the revolution did not materialize by the end of his run, that he would fall in line, acknowledge the reality, and support the party's nominee. He has done what he said he would do from the very beginning. I am as disappointed by the outcome as any hardcore Bernie supporter, Matt continues. However, I'm not mad at Bernie. Good. Good. You'd be surprised the number who are. Oh, he stuck a knife in our backs. I'm mad at my fellow citizens who had a chance to place an honest broker at the top of the ticket, but did not materialize in sufficient numbers to make that happen. And I agree. And you can't, even if you factor in every voting irregularity in the country, and this is just a fact, it doesn't change the outcome. I acknowledge all the hurdles and roadblocks that were placed in his way. The front-loading of the primary with the southern states, the media blackout, the election irregularities, etc., etc., etc. But the bottom line remains, we the people didn't show up in enough numbers to change our world. That was not the fault of Mr. Sanders. That's on us. The young people showed up, probably because they consume their news more through social media than us older folks who still rely on mass media for our information. So if there's a silver lining to this election cycle, it's that the future will be led by those folks that showed up in droves for Sanders. I just hope I can live long enough to see those people take over the system and put in place the changes that the majority of Americans want, whether those Americans know it or not. I'm one of those people that cannot vote for Hillary. I'm fortunate to live in a state, California, which will not be in play and will vote for the Democratic nominee. So I'll vote for Jill Stein again as I did the last election cycle, knowing that my vote will not impact the outcome, but at least I can sleep at night knowing that I voted my conscience. In the meantime, I will continue to protest against imperialism, war, and income inequality. As Savio said, there's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate the people to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. Maybe someday, enough will join us. Maybe someday. Maybe someday. Maybe. And the thing, and you know, the only thing that I would add to what Matt says is that Bernie did, it's not like Bernie did something and it's over. He started something. But when a 74-year-old starts something, it comes with the presumption that somebody else will pick it up and carry it forward. And that's the question now. What happens and you know, talking about 2018 before 2016 has even happened, the election here in this year has even happened. I know that's frustrating, and talking about 2020 seems really dumb, but you know what? The campaigning for the 2020 Republican nomination is already underway. Witness, among others, some of the comings and goings and doings of one Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who is self-convinced that he is, I don't know, destined to run our country into the ground. The boomers, and, you know, I'm a boomer, okay, by some metrics. The boomers you will not always have with you. The cranky, thin-skinned white people who insisted on having Hillary Clinton as the nominee are nearing the end of their power. And consequently, that means that change is in the air. Here's the question. What happens when the energies of those people who felt the burn, who worked so hard for Bernie, who are of the so-called Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, what happens when they get a little bit older, get a 401k plan if it doesn't, you know, get stolen from them, get a house payment, more car payment, insurance, and have to settle down into the grind that is the American dream, if it's still there for them, do they become as conservative as the wing of the Democratic Party that has insisted upon giving us the single least likable candidate probably ever to run for the Democratic as the Democratic nominee for president? Least trustworthy. And, in point of fact, some of the poorest judgment. That's the question for 2018. That's the question for 2020. That's the question for 2022 and 24. That is the question of American politics. Will the old nasty racists that and thugs, good word, Andy, in the Netherlands, who put Trump in play, or who wanted to crucify America? They're going away too, and the actual numbers suggest that they're going away faster in terms of effect than folks are on our side. So all these things bear consideration. And then there's a note from Jennifer in Australia. You may recall Jennifer left Australia, came to the U.S., where she's from, and spent a considerable amount of time campaigning for Bernie. And she did so on the premise that we were probably not going to see Bernie's like again. You know, what Matt in San Francisco described as an honest broker. You may recall Matt said, "I am mad at my fellow citizens who had a chance to place an honest broker at the top of the ticket but did not materialize in sufficient numbers to make that happen." Right. Well, Jennifer put on her walking shoes and, well, she didn't walk back to the U.S. It's kind of damp trying to do that. Not to mention the sharks and the great big Texas-sized pool of garbage that's out in the ocean. But no, Jennifer figuratively put on her walking shoes, came to the U.S., and worked for Bernie's election. So I have a note from Jennifer. She says, "Laid up in bed, I'm told I have about a half a dozen shootings, terrorist attacks, and a coup to familiarize myself with, but at the moment I don't care who shot who hates who wants who pulverized, wiped off the face of the earth. At the moment I'm just glad to be in my own bed. It's all a blur, and it's all just hate, raw hate, institutionalized hate, organized hate, and I can't see, I mean literally can't see very well, can't breathe, can't stop pinching my brow in agony. For now, all of that needs to fuck off out of my head, because there's one thing Graham tells me is most pressing, the U.S. election. Really? I'd hope to be done with it. And that, as usual, the progressives are eating each other. He says Bernie folk are fuming mad and Trump Hillary are 50-50 as a result." Okay, Jennifer says, "I think," and this is in caps, "I might have something of import to say. Almost all of the only people left in to my U.S. back home family are gay or black or gay and black, so most of my peeps are conflicted and freaked out. My gay family are pretty clear. Trump going equals going backwards. For my black family, it's more complicated because how has anything ever gotten better under compromised conditions? My best bestie in the whole wide world, a black gay man, well, his head's exploding. But I have one cure for everyone, one ring to unite them all, one ring to, right. All caps again. We must stop Trump. Almost more to the point, Pence, full stop. Here's the cure. I learned this in PA during after-hours brown liquor chat. Those are always beneficial. The truth of the matter. Bernie Sanders ran almost 90% at first, strictly for one reason and one reason only. To make certain Hillary Clinton did not run unopposed, which she was poised to do. Believe me, you, he never expected to get very far out of the gate. Which is not to say he wasn't genuine in running and genuine in his desire to win. For one does not endeavor to execute a run for the U.S. presidency without sincerity and a desire to win. However, yep, Bernie Sanders is no dummy. He knew the tattoo of socialism was a huge handicap, but he also knew it would be an eye-turner and an effective mechanism for movement. But, in part, his run was a mere strategy. So don't despair. Instead, be uplifted. The aim was to affect the election. And, again, all caps, and we did. But then something happened. He spoke, and millions of people listened. People came from around the world, and a movement grew. Come to the edge, he said. We can't. We're afraid, they responded. Come to the edge, he said. We can't. We will fall, they responded. Come to the edge, he said. And so they came, and he pushed them, and they flew. In the end, the system was slightly stronger than our movement, but not by much. However, to take the Oval is not the only jewel in the crown. Just ask Elizabeth Warren about that. Meanwhile, way too many people seem to be resisting understanding of the fact that, again, because it's important to acknowledge, Bernie ran to prevent Hillary from running unopposed, and he succeeded spectacularly. He, all caps again, changed her campaign. In ways that would never have happened otherwise. No, we do not love her, we do not trust her, we do not admire her or desire her. Still, the worst possible thing we can do is to let Bernie and his movement down by giving in to disappointment. He's realistic. We need to be realistic. Bernie knows what he represents to the political beast. He knows he was, is a threat, but went on to exceed even his own expectations. Sorry, having myself circled the perimeter of Bernie or bust for a red-hot minute, I've come to see that it is our exceptions, which are our expectations, which are unrealistic. I'm not saying it's a joy to recognize this, only that we must so recognize or perish in a scorched-earth demagogic dystopia. When has politics never been a series of often slow steps? Of course it's tempting to demand leaps and bounds, to insist that we deserve leaps and bounds, but show me one example of leaps and bounds. Plus, explain to me how Trump-Pence is a scaric, an iota, a single step in a forward progressive motion. Again, is Hillary what we want, need? Hell no! But is she by a significant degree a damn sight better than she was in 2008? Okay, not hell yeah, but a whole hell of a lot more yeah than the alternative, and maybe even then some if we can get rid of the likes of Chuck Schumer et al. By the way, looking for some white meat, Hillary? I have two words for you. One, Bernie. Two, VP. Unrealistic? Theater? Maybe. I can think of worse people to have in a position to break a tie. But in light of recent polls, such a stunt just might be the only way she can save hers and our fucking asses. Like Rasputin? Really? See? I'm still semi-comatose, like Rip Van Winkle. 100-year sleep. Oh, God, I need to recuperate so badly. Well, I suppose I could have written Rapunzel, Jennifer says. That from someone who got out in the trenches at tremendous expense to herself and her understanding of the lay of the land based upon the real-time, real-world view she got of it. Jen was even dismayed at the outcome of the Australian election. Said, I woke up and these people here elected Pauline Hanson to the frickin' Senate, sort of like Palin without the charm, so I really need to get out. Then as I became a bit more cogent, I was able to read that the orange tyrant chosen for VP, the other white meat, Mikey the Monster rat mouse with Christian hair, second only to Bob McDonald because he's not yet a former governor. Note, the orange one hates losers. And Graham tells me Hillary might match yawn for yawn with Tim Kaine. Really, Hillary? What's with the white meat people? I take remarks like Jen's very seriously, as well as Matt's. I guess out there, there are people who are really excited by Hillary. I don't know any of them. I'm with her. Well, it'll be a cold day in hell when you see that when you see that as my avatar on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. And there was a conversation that took place in which I believe Michael and Madison made the comparison, the difference between eating a plate full of shit or 100 times as much shit, plate full being Hillary and 100 times as much being Trump. Because, of course, over here in purist land, we insist on screaming that voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil. On the other hand, however, there is a different way to look at it. I'm not telling you to look at it this way. I'm not telling you you're wrong if you don't. But the other way to look at this is the question of net positives. One, are there any net positives to having Donald Trump be president of the United States? Answer, no. Question two, are there any net positives to having Hillary Clinton be president of the United States? And I will leave you to answer that question for yourself. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, take that as you wish. There are people out there who think that somehow or another, magically, we're going to have this moment where the people who think fetuses are people, the people who think guns are more important than seven-year-olds, the people who think Obama is a secret Muslim, and that Hillary actually personally murdered Ambassador Chris Stevens, you know, with her remote death ray thought control processes, are going to join up, marching forward with us progressive people who want universal single payer health care, and who want national high speed rail, and who want to get rid of the burning of coal, and we're all just gonna and the right wing freaks are just gonna go, oh, okay, let's do that. Call me when that happens. Oh, this is interesting. The Republican National Committee has been forced to close its online convention chat This, according to the Angry Indian, after anti-Semites have turned it into a Jew-bashing hate fest. Meanwhile, he informs me that in Germany, someone has just been attacked on a train with a hatchet. And meanwhile, Repig-licking Congressman Steve Cantaloupe's King of Iowa, the pride of Iowa, has declared in front of God, America, and everybody that white people have contributed more in world history than any other group. Really, do tell, white people. Okie dokie. And we're surprised why? Well, we're not. So now, halfway through the program, and with the first $10, thank you very kindly to Snork, having been knocked down on Anani Moose's challenge, Anani Mouse's challenge. I can't spell anonymous. And with 90 more to go, yeah, it's that time. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, just paces off the carnival midway, the thin cybernetic veil of canvas that stands between you and absolute right-wing morality. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. We've got them all for you here. Birther Morans, Deather Morans, Tenther Morans, Bagger Morans, Bircher Morans, Booger-Eating Morans, Repiglican Morans, Libertarian Morans, Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. For less than 17 cents per hour of programming for your average $10 a month subscriber, you get them all. Plus the other 4 days of the week. This is, in fact, the program. You can't tell the Morans without a program, but this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Please remember, as you step forward to enter the Moran Monday tent, that you should keep a close eye and a firm hand on children, pets, purses, backpacks, European messenger bags, and, yes, even the iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Mm-hmm. Head for the hills. And you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And this one rocketed to the top of the list early. And as an added bonus, it comes from almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan. Because after all, we have purists of our own who stayed home and helped us to have a teabagger legislature. We've had them for 2 years, and the West Virginia Revolution, incidentally, has still not started. Nonetheless, this is amazing. What's the slogan of United Airlines? Fly the friendly skies, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, it just so happens that over in Berkeley County, not Beckley, Berkeley, I know, confusing, that's over in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, you know, a couple hours distance from, say, D.C., or maybe, you know, Dulles International Airport. They elected themselves a goomer by the name of Michael Folk. Yes, he's a real folkhead. No, F-O-L-K, Michael Folk. He is, of course, a Repiglican and, as you'll see, a teabagger. And he took, and he's a pilot, okay? No, really, he's a pilot for New United Airlines. the Friendly Skies people. Yes. And it was Friday when he jumped on onto the Twitter device and declared, and I quote, declared of Hillary Clinton, and I quote, that she should be tried for treason, murder, and crimes against the U.S. Constitution, then hung on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Now, I know there's a lot of people in this audience in the Horn Family Community Congregation who bear no great love for Hillary Clinton and even less for her more vociferous, thin-skinned, annoying, privileged boomer supporters. I know that. But I really don't think there's a hell of a lot served by calling for the assassination of political opponents. It is, at least in theory, illegal. Of course, the standard caveat of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R applies. It's okay if you're a Republican. I have no doubt that once the word of his persecution gets around, they'll find a way to wedge him into a speaking slot at the Republican National Clavern there in Cleveland. Where, incidentally, in another Moran Monday nomination, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the newspaper for that area, and the associated website, cleveland.com, featured an article saying that Cleveland is well prepared to deal with the protesters and necessary arrests that attend a political convention. The news story went on to mention that Cleveland's night courts, which are not nearly as cool as the 80s sitcom featuring Harry Anderson and the late Selma Diamond, not nearly as cool as fun as that show was, but that they'll have extended hours. Now, of course, newspaper stories like to have photos with them because, you know, if there's not a picture, we won't read it. And the picture that the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com chose to use to accompany the story of expanded night court hours to deal with lots of arrests was, of course, of a black man, a close-up of a black man's hands behind his back with handcuffs on them. No, really, they did. So it's kind of a nomination within a nomination. But no, I have no doubt that because I'm sure he's being persecuted. Delegate Folk, who called for the assassination, the killing of Hillary Clinton, flies planes for United Airlines. I made a point of just getting a tweet out to them, letting them know. And really, I mean, they fly out of Charleston. I fly out of Charleston. I have in the past flown United. I never will again. Because if they've got one right-wing lunatic in the cockpit, it's kind of like cockroaches. If you see one, you've probably got 1,000. Now, the West Virginia Democratic Party called for his resignation and his punishment by West Virginia House of Delegates Speaker Tim Armstead, which will happen probably in the same time frame in which the Greens ever elect a president, i.e. never. Quoting from the Charleston Gazette story, Folk said if a private person had done what Clinton did, they would be put in prison, which contradicts what FBI Director James Comey said on July 5th when announcing the decision not to charge her. West Virginia Democratic Party Chairwoman Belinda Biafore, who was installed in a bit of a coup herself, said, "The mention of hanging and implication of murder should never ever be acceptable. To think that a person in a leadership position in our state can say these types of things is baffling and should not be tolerated." Really? Really, Belinda? Baffling? Baffling? You're baffled that a teabagger would say something that hateful and stupid? You're baffled? Yeah, no wonder we didn't want you for chairperson. "Folk's actions should deem him as unfit to serve, and Speaker Tim Armstead should take action if Folk doesn't resign." Folk, meanwhile, said, "What I called for is for her to be tried, and the maximum penalty for treason is death. Technically, it's not death by hanging." Oh, so he just wanted her to be hanged for something else, and maybe we deal with her with treason with that. I don't think he was helping himself there. He just wants her hanged, period, because she's Hillary! God damn it! Then, of course, he climbed up on the cross, because they keep him handy. "Ernie, I'm right nailed in." He continued and said, "To people do wrong, they need to be held accountable. And exercising a First Amendment right is not necessarily doing wrong." Well, dumbass, you weren't exercising a First Amendment right. You were exercising a dumbass right. And you have the right to be a dumbass in the United States of America. And no, the government cannot quash your free speech because you're a dumbass. On the other hand, United Airlines is not the United States government. And if enough people say, not one of your planes. I don't care if it's the last one on the, not if it's the last flight out of Casablanca. Ain't getting on it. I'll deal with Monsieur Renault if I have to. Maybe I'll go and, never mind, go and talk to Sydney Greenstreet, but I ain't getting on no United planes. Maybe they'll do something about him. But he's just exercising his First Amendment right. Well, there are limitations on free speech, Cletus. Fire in a crowded theater. Calling for the assassination of your political enemies. Yeah, kind of. As a sort of a denouement to the story, United Airlines announced that it has, in fact, suspended Michael Folk. United Airlines wrote on its Twitter account yesterday evening, "This pilot has been removed from flying pending our investigation. We are appalled by his threatening comments." If the suspension is the front end of making sure he never flies passengers anywhere as a common carrier ever again, okay. But if United says to him, "Don't do that again," "I won't do that again." No, because that, look, what's the difference? What is the difference between Michael Folk, teabagging repig-licking delegate from West Virginia, flying around the friendly skies, muttering, "Goddamn Hillary, somebody ought to hang her on the mall." What and from there on, you know, whatever can happen with the spirochetes in his brain. What's the difference between him and the guy who's, you know, just left out of JFK, bound for Cairo, who somewhere over the Atlantic yells, "Aloha, snack bar!" and corkscrews the plane into the sea? Not damned much. Marty points out, "I do believe he's probably flying under the protection of the Airline Pilots Association. As a good union, they should have his back." No, as a good union, they should say, "See ya, buddy!" wouldn't want to be you. He is, in fact, a member of the House Liberty Caucus in the West Virginia House of Delegates. This is the bunch who puts urine-colored snake flags on their desks when they first took power. They replaced the West Virginia flags and the American flags with urine-colored snake flags. Meanwhile, Tim Armistead did run out to the nearest microphone and said, "Let me make clear that Delegate Folk is not a part of the leadership team of the House, and his comments are his own and do not represent our Republican caucus. While I, along with members of our caucus and leadership team, have great concerns about Hillary Clinton's views, actions, and positions, particularly as they relate to our energy industry, we certainly condemn any calls for violence against her or any other person." Now, he did all of this, this dumbass, sent to the House of Delegates, incidentally, by a bunch of dumbasses who voted for him. You know, he's not some sort of prime mover dumbass. He didn't wish himself into the House of Delegates. He was sent there by dumbasses who showed up to an election in 2014 while a bunch of other people stayed home. You know, because Obama, Kenyan Muslim, you slurper war on coal, right? He started in 2012, was re-elected in 2014, so the decent people stayed home twice. And you know what? Once he's done up on the cross, he'll probably get himself reelected. He just tells it like it is. He's a truth teller. That's what he is. And he's not willing to be politically correct. And he's right. Hillary Clinton should be hung. No, stupid, it's hanged. Oh, that's disturbing. Brother Deacon Asa says, not surprised at all about the United pilot. You'd be surprised, you'd be shocked at what percentage of the aviation industry consists of trumpanzees. Probably enough to make me never want to get on another airplane, as if there weren't already a million different reasons. So, why would Cletus P. Dipstick say something like this? Well, he watched. He watched a video from representing Jason Chaffetz, and it got him so all head up because Jason Chaffetz has an IQ decidedly as low as or similar to that of the average teabagger, trumpanzee. Or a hunk of sphagnum moss, and that's how this works. One trumpanzee starts shrieking and screaming and jumping up and down and shitting in his hand and throwing it at the bars of the cage, and the next thing you know, another one does it, and pretty soon all the trumpanzees are hopping up and down and shitting in their hands, and then they get enterprising and they start shitting in both hands and flinging it with both hands, and the next thing you know, you've got a political movement. Or a Republican convention. You pick. So, Delegate Cletus P. Dipstick, Michael Folk. Well, he can't help but be at the top of Moran Monday. But dear God, there's more. Oh, by the way, thank you very kindly to Steve in New York. He says, I'll put a $10 challenge up to answer the challenge. So the next person who kicks in $10 on a Nonny Mouse's challenge gets it doubled to $20. courtesy of Steve. Has to happen first, though. $90 to go. Thank you very kindly, Steve. Following up on what the angry Indian told me about what had happened in Germany, Marty tells me 21 people were attacked on a German train by someone with an axe, 19 short of what Lizzie Borden managed. Apparently, though, the axe wielder contracted a fatal case of lead poisoning. And then there's Baton Rouge. I don't know if I'm up for that conversation. Because it seems a case of something wicked this way comes. You all know the story by now. A guy with a semi, and there are parts of the story that just make me crazy. I was watching a little bit of coverage earlier today, and someone on CBS reported, "Federal officials want to know where he got the gun." Yeah, okay. He was a 29-year-old man, albeit black. And he was in the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world, in the universe, today, now, forever, amen, under God. And so I think it's safe to say he could probably get that firearm just about anywhere in the 50 states. Might be a little bit more complicated in one or two of them. But he was a Kansas City fella. And unless Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, tells me otherwise, it ain't hard to get a semi-automatic assault rifle in Kansas City, Missouri. Or for that matter, Kansas City, Kansas. Because there's two, you know. But I said, yeah, okay. I mean, I guess your federal law enforcement and your Louisiana stand law enforcement do want to know exactly where he got the gun, because, you know, then they could go and they could look at the gun, at the gun store owner, and say, "Well, why'd you sell him the gun?" And the gun store owner can say, "Well, because he had the money." And the law enforcement can say, "But didn't you see he was all black and stuff?" And the gun store owner can say, "Yeah, but the money was green. And I tried it out. It spended real good. And the bullets he bought that with green money too. How's I supposed to know? How dare you challenge my Second Amendment rights to sell guns?" Right? Yeah. So even though I said I didn't know if I was up to talking about it, looks like I'm talking about it. Now, you may have heard the angry Indian and me, well, not and me, but mostly angry, talk about these little sects that exist. And the interesting thing about the guy in the Kansas City guy in the Baton Rouge shooting is that he had he considered himself a life coach, a nutritionist, and had been in the Marine Corps. And he did, I guess, things on YouTube that he called Convos with Cosmo. And had taken steps to legally change his name to Cosmo. And somewhere along the way, I read that he referred also to himself as Setephren. Something like S-E-T-E-P-H-R-E-N. Which kind of had an Egyptian flavor to it for me. Sounded kind of... Well, I don't know. I just thought of the conversations I've had with Angry. Oh, and by the way, yes, Carol Baker tells me that out there, not too far from Hooterville, Kansas City-wise, Carol says, it's easier to get an assault rifle than it is to get a pizza delivered. And I have a feeling that that's not hyperbole. That's, by the way, that's what Delegate Michael Folk described his clearly stated desire to see Hillary Clinton killed. That's what he blamed it on. Well, it was hyperbole. It was free speech. It's my free speech. You're suppressing my free speech. Y'all just keep suppressing. I'm going to climb up here on the cross. Get off the cross. We need the wood. By the way, Carol noted earlier that Nielsen has 100% of all TV sets tuned to the Republican National Clavern from the Burning Cross Trailer Park, out not too far from downtown Hooterville. Mm-hmm. So, Baton Rouge guy went to great pains to declare that he was not a part of any groups. He said he'd been a member of the Nation of Islam and a member of some other groups, but I'm not anymore. And that he was acting strictly on his own. He also said, hey, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're not alive anymore. Or just because you're dead and shed your physical body doesn't mean you're not alive somewhere else. Which meant that he had hopes of some sort of afterlife. And I can't help but still think that that's a problem. If you think that there's somewhere better than here waiting for you, it makes doing heinous things here a little bit easier. Because, the sweet by and by and the pearly gates and harps and angels and wings and halos and shit. Oh, that's just lovely. Carol lets me know. Some asshole Baton Rouge politician pointed out on Chicken Noodle News that the shooter was from Kansas City because that's not a Baton Rouge value. Carol noting, I wasn't aware murdering cops was a Kansas City value. I feel like more of an outsider than ever. If it's any consolation, Carol, I feel like an outsider most every minute of every day, anywhere in, Merca. Wow, what a lineup. Right now, at the Repiglick and National Clavern, Scott Baio, Duck Doofus, and yes, and we don't know if she's going to have clothes on or not, or how much, Melanoma Trump. Hoo-wee! In regard to Carol's note of feeling like an outsider, Hoghead in the chat room says, me and Carol Baker must be neighbors. I got a feeling we're all neighbors when it comes right down to it on this score. And then this. Moment. Um. I don't know exactly where this takes place. But this is a little chunk of bizarreness. Oh, and by the way, Scott Baio, there's a... Well, here, just for fun. Let's see what happens. Yeah, you'll hear the clacking. This is happening in real time. S-C-O-T-T-B-A-I-O. Let's see, there it is. Scott Baio, handpicked by a desperate Trump to speak at his odd convention, doesn't begin with a D. His D-list RNC. Okay, that's funny. Yeah, he's got a. There's a picture of him that he tweeted out with Donald Trump socks on his feet. That's about 17 kinds of gross. But he reached a certain degree of infamy. Recently, in what was it he said about Hillary? Oh, there it is. Yeah, it goes back to the yes, he also tweeted out a photo of Hillary Clinton in front of some banner. It probably says country, C-O-U-N-T-R-Y. This may be the best meme out there, hashtag never Hillary. And it's a picture of Hillary Clinton standing in front of a banner that said country, but all you can see is capital C-U-N-T. The meme says, so there's a letter blocked. What difference does it make? And then when people gave him grief, he said, here's a picture. Show me exactly when I called her a name or anything. Maybe he's going to get a new show out of it. Chachi loves fascism. Meanwhile, having completed his rounds of the building and grounds, Brother Deacon Gerald says, I've been at work all day. I just saw the video from the Republican convention, and all I can say is, wow! Although I must admit, it's quite entertaining to watch the RNC implode. I'm a bit giddy inside about it. Well, just as long as you don't get one of those patented Chris Matthews tingles down your leg, Gerald, you'll be fine. Gerald says, now the DNC isn't without its problems, but I'm telling you, I'm feeling a lot better about the election in November. Well, see, that's because you're a sheeple. That's the way the oligarchy wants you to feel about it, Gerald. Mm-hmm. Okay, so old white lady Moran Monday nomination. So here's the setup. I don't know where this comes from. But it was shot on the 4th of July this past. Young black man wearing a necklace of some big polished wooden beads and a sweatshirt of some sort that appears to declare servants of YHWH. Moment. which immediately kind of lets me know we're dealing with some sort of religiosity here. I mean, why do you wear your Servants of YHWH sweatshirt to go visit Mama on the 4th of July? Because that's what he does. Mama lives in an apartment complex. Looks to be an apartment complex for older people. Carol pointing out, Scott Baio and Antonio Sabato Jr. will speak on the GOP's convention's first night, so Trump is breaking his promise to feature celebrities. Angry tells me this guy may be one of those groups that considers themselves Black Hebrews. That's the general term for them. But anyway, never mind. I mean, it doesn't have a whole bunch of relevance except for the fact that, well, might be dealing with a fundamentalist of a different sort here. Look, I'm almost trained to look for this stuff, so I can't help it. So anyway, while he goes to visit Mama on the 4th of July, a good 50, 60 feet away from where this lady's apartment is, this woman's apartment, she's sitting out there on her front stoop with a pair of binoculars, scoping out Mama and his kids and Mama's son. In other words, Mama, son, and grandkids. Just watching them with the binoculars. And after a while, he gets a little put out at it, as anyone would, and decides to try to find out just what in the bejesus is going on. The following ensues. You will hear the voice of the young Black man. Then you will hear the voice of a really bizarre old white lady. At 8:08 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I might add, this might be a good time to have the hockey puck handy.
Yo, yo, what's good, man? It's your boy Nasty, man. We're going to show you something, man. We're going to show you, you know, this racist, crazy, white, European woman, man. This don't make no sense. This woman got binoculars on us, watching us. I'm going to show you something real quick. This don't make no sense.
Luckily, those crack pops you hear in the background are presumably fireworks. So they're, you know, it's not like gunfire. So just relax, relax. He'll set it up for you.
Check this out. We're gonna get her on film. Look at this. See, she got binoculars. Did y'all see that? That woman just said rape.
It should be noted, he's a rock solid 50 feet from her. Not even breathing the same air as bizarre old white lady is. I mean, she responds like a parrot. Well, that's probably unfair to Punky. Sorry, Punky. Punky's a cocktail, you know. Let's hear that again.
Check this out. We're gonna get her on film. Look at this. See, she got binoculars.
Attack! Attack! Oh, I mean rape!
Oh.
Did y'all see that? That woman just said rape. That woman said rape, and I'm way over here. Look it.
And the little yappy dog is probably saying the same thing. Now, I might point out that while this has some documentary value, what the young man is doing is extremely dangerous. Because as an old white European man, as he would refer to me, I can point out that old white European ladies screaming attack, attack, rape, rape will often get people, you know, picking up the phones and dialing 911 and reporting that an old European white lady is hollering attack, attack, rape, rape, and give the address, at which point the cops show up and suddenly we're talking about another news story where a young black man is dead at the hands of the police in Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe, amen, under God. Right? From bad to worse, now he's going to engage her in dialogue. And I believe in dialogue. Where it is A, possible, and B, productive. I mean, I know there are members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who still enjoy going out and playing with the wingnuts once in a while. I don't. I got my fill of that years ago and realized that my life was too valuable to me and my family, if no one else, for me to waste any of it in conversation with people who were not going to change their minds because they lived in a world that was not governed by facts or the laws of nature, even. We're talking about people who could float right off the planet because they don't believe in the law of gravity anymore. No, but you know, it's not like she yells, attack, attack, rape, rape, and runs inside. No, there's going to be dialogue.
She said attack and rape. That's this woman right here. Right here. Down here. This woman is watching us with binoculars. We're sitting over here minding our business. You hear?
Did you hear that? You were coming to rape me. I saw it in your face. Really? She must have special powers. She can just see, rape right on somebody's face. You know, especially if they're dark skinned, because it's that dark skin that says rape to her, after all. And it's her neighbor, a black woman, on the balcony one floor up, who says, "Who said that?" And she said that. And then she explains to her neighbor upstairs, well, that.
He said attack and rape. That's this woman right here. Right here. Down here. This woman is watching us with binoculars. We're sitting over here minding our business.
You were coming to rape me. I saw it in your face.
You hear that? I was coming to what?
You were approaching me.
I was approaching you. I was approaching you with what, the camera?
I was not approaching you.
So I was approaching you to rape you?
Yeah.
Really? Really? So I was coming to rape you?
Pretty clear there's not a no dogs rule in this apartment. But apparently you can only have small, yippy dogs. Not that I got anything against small, yippy dogs. I've had them. I love them. But mercy sakes, when they all get going at once.
Why would you sit up here and sit up here and tell that bold-faced lie? Why would you do that?
No, I'm not a bold-faced
Did it make you feel good to say, because I'm black, that I was coming to rape you? I'm going to ask you a question. When I was approaching you.
I was not approaching you.
I'm going to ask you a question.
I'm not approaching you.
When I was approaching you, did I approach you with my phone out? So if I'm approaching you with my phone out, what would make you think that I'm coming to rape you? Because she was watching us with binoculars while we're over there grilling. Why is she sitting out here on the porch with binoculars out in her hands watching us and the family while we're grilling?
What are you afraid that I'm going to see with my binoculars?
You're not going to see anything with your binoculars.
Why are you approaching me?
I'm coming up to you to ask
you
because I'm asking you why do you have your binoculars out watching us barbecue? Why are you watching us?
You've been out there all afternoon.
So why are you watching us?
Because I'm paying attention for my own safety.
Do you know that back in the 1900s that Europeans, women, used to lie on black men to say that they were raping them when they haven't and when they never touched them or did anything? Do you know that?
Stay away from me.
And what you just done? I got video though, so you report, you're going to be caught a lie because I got you on camera.
Fine.
So go ahead and report it. That's my mother up there, okay? And ever since I come here to see my mother, when I come here,
That's three, didn't she teach you any betters? The question, of course, is better than what? Better than being a young black man who comes to visit with his mama and grill out with her grandkids? Better than what? Didn't she teach you any better than to be offended when a cranky old white lady spies on you with binoculars? Didn't she teach you any better? 'Cause see, once upon a time, folks were taught better. Don't complain about the crazy old white lady watching you with binoculars, because if you do anything about it, she's liable to call the cops, and the cops are liable to come up and kill you dead. And by the way, and I don't mean for this to be any sort of a trigger, I apologize if it is, rape is real. Rape is horrible. Rape is a nightmare that, in many instances, never ends. And so this cranky old white lady here, well, by lying about it, and she is lying, this cranky old white lady contributes to the difficulty women who have been subjected to the real sort have in obtaining anything resembling justice. It continues.
Since I came here, every since I come through the front door, you know what you do? You harass me. You harass me, you harass my children, you harass everyone when we come to visit my mother.
Do you have that on tape?
Absolutely.
Well, you're struggling with the tape.
Absolutely.
You have that on tape?
Yeah, you see you on tape? Thank God for cell phone cameras, because you people can't lie anymore.
You people.
You sit up there and try to lie and bear false witness on me. Don't ever bear false witness on me to say that I raped you. But you just said that I raped you. You said rape.
Yes,
so if I'm approaching you, what would make you think that I'm trying to rape you?
Why are you approaching?
How do you know? How do you know that I couldn't? How do you know that I wasn't coming here?
Am I your friend?
How do you know? How do you know that I wasn't coming here? How do you know that I wasn't coming?
This certainly is productive, isn't it? I guess this is where where I mentioned the obligatory, not all white people. Right? Not all cops. Not all white people. Not all black people. Not all Asians. Not all men. Not all women. Not all Native Americans. Not all indigenous people of anywhere on the planet. Not all of anybody. No true Scotsman. But once you do that, you realize the foolishness of such an assertion. Because all people don't do evil. Evil is often, almost always, an individual choice. And yes, evil's a strong word, but, you know, rape is an evil. As Earther points out from the chat room, rape because black. Ooh, is sister a precog like in Minority Report? Well, then no more evidence is needed. Pre-crime. And now the neighbors are coming out. And bless his heart, he continues to remonstrate with her. And I can happily tell you that as far as I can tell from having viewed the video several times, nothing ill came to this young man. And I am particularly gratified by that. Because by God, it could so easily have. And given the fact that young black men of roughly the same age group as this young man have in the last couple of weeks murdered, you know, 8 police officers. Guess what? The police are going to be real tetchy, as if they weren't before. How easy would it be for a paranoid police officer to see the cell phone in that young man's hand and, well, it looked like a gun to me. Oh, great moments in white privilege, by the way. Story came out of somewhere in the UK, I think. An idiot, oh wait, it's Monday, a moron was stopped from boarding a plane because said moron had his cell phone in his back pocket. Now, cell phones are extremely expensive things. And we put cases and screen protectors on them. Sometimes they have extended batteries, extended memory, both, whatever. Sometimes they're designed so that they can be thrown 35 feet and land from a height of 30 feet. And nothing will happen to the phone inside when they hit the ground. This moron's cell phone case was designed to look like a semi-automatic pistol. Not going to give security or cops or anything any grief at all over that. I mean, what level of stupid attaches to the person who looks and says, well, I'll be damned. It's a cell phone case, looks like a gun, like a pistol. Well, I'm going to have me one of them. I'm gonna carry it with me when I go flying. Wrong accent, I'm sure. Surprised they're not for sale in West Virginia. Surprised I don't see them everywhere I go. Then again, maybe some of the guns I see everywhere I go are just cell phone cases. Yeah, see, it keeps them honest. Mm-hmm. All right, a little bit more of this.
I'm here to ask you a question. I was right there when you was yelling rape, and I got it on camera. I was way over here when you was yelling rape. I wasn't doing anything to you.
What did you want to ask me?
I was asking you, why do you have your binoculars out, spying and watching us while we're grilling?
Why shouldn't I?
Because you shouldn't. That doesn't make any sense.
Is that a rule you made up?
It's not a rule that I made up, but I just want to know, why would you do that?
Well, I'm watching what's going on around here.
What's so just because we're black people, barbecuing at the grill, you're watching what's going on. So don't talk about that we're trying to be racist, because if we were trying to be racist, right? If we were trying to be racist, I don't watch you.
Are you also a Muslim?
You see how you make us?
Oh, you're wearing a turban type thing. This is the kind of thing I was waiting. This is what I was waiting for. You're wearing a turban type thing. And he's not. A turban is a wound piece of headgear, sometimes worn for religious reasons because the deity will like you better if you wear headgear. For some reason or another, deities are fascinated with headgear. I got no idea. I'm clueless. Gerald points out, level of stupid equals teabagger. Damn right. You know, if we could miraculously walk into the picture and walk through her back porch door, you know what's on the TV in there. It's about a 90% chance. Okay, let's give it an 85% chance. It's Fox News. There's another 13% chance it's The Blaze. There's a 2% chance it's a soap opera, because July the 4th was on a Monday, and there's a 1% chance it's the Home Shopping Network. No. There may be some Electric Jesus in there, too. But that you're wearing one of those turban-type things. Are you a Muslim? And so now it becomes a little bit more clear. Stupid old teabagger lady screamed, "I'm being attacked, rape, rape," because she was pretty sure that the ISIS had finally come for her, just like they've been a-telling her on the Fox News. Because they say that on the Fox News all the damned time. Because Fox News' audience has to be kept in a state of perpetual terror. So, you know, what was that? Are you a Muslim?
Racist. Because if we were trying to be racist, right? If we were trying to be racist.
Do I not know if you?
I don't watch you.
Are you also a Muslim?
You see how you make assumptions because I have a turban on? So just because I have a turban on my head, I'm a Muslim.
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Oh, so you should. You should ask instead of assume. You know what?
You know what?
You should really repent, because God don't like ugly. Really repent from how you are acting and how you're treating people. And what makes you think?
I'm not hearing any preaching from you.
Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa gets it. That young Negro's weapon had an Apple logo on it, said the white cop after killing the young man. Oh, well. Forget it, Jake. It's America Town. Because it is. The angry Indian says simply, madness. And madness grips this country. I understand why Donald Trump wants to be president of the United States. Because madmen who are also megalomaniacs want to lead mad people deeper into their madness. Yeah? I guess anybody else, you've got to chalk it up to something resembling ambition. Or maybe a messiah complex. But really, and this is a serious question, and you're free to try to answer it. You know, Hillary's slogan, such as it is stronger together. That may be true, but at what point in time, and at what point in time, any time in the last 50 years, has this country been together? Because I can't think of any time that we have. Oh, yeah, sure. The Congress went out on the steps of the Capitol and sang God Bless America or something ruins of the World Trade Center in a smoking heap as a show of unity to the nation. That lasted about a millisecond. But when? We damn sure couldn't be stronger together with the Iraq War, because something approaching, not at the beginning, but by the time we were into it real nice and deep, too deeply to quickly extricate ourselves, the American people were not in agreement that it was a good idea. Even when Dim Leader was running us up to his little war of choice, a whole bunch of us were still standing there going, oh, hell no. And it turns out we were right. I heard I heard last night in one of the probably most bizarre interviews of Leslie Stahl's entire career, she interviewed the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, and the theocratic nightmare, Mike Pence, together. And Trump declared, of course, I was one of the only ones who was against the Iraq War, which is a giant barrel of so much horseshit. It's not even demonstrable that he was actually against the Iraq War. But who in their right mind would want to be president of this looming, impending disaster of a country? You know, the never Hillary crowd says that, well, you know, maybe it'll make the revolution come faster. To which I reply, ha! Any revolution that comes to this country is not going to be one you want to stick around for, because it will be a fascist revolution. And Trump aims to lead it. We've been warned. When fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in the flag and carrying a Bible. Well, they're all gathered right there in Cleveland, aren't they? They may be gathered in Cleveland, but they're also sitting on their porch on the 4th of July. Old, white, and damn sure a voter.
What makes you think that you are helping young children around here, or you can guide young children around here, or you can be a leader for young children around here, when you're teaching people, racism? When you're teaching people racism.
She says everything three times. There aren't supposed to be young children around here. There aren't supposed to be young children around here. There aren't supposed to be young children around here. So this is this is apparently some sort of a retirement apartment complex for elderly people, and they're not supposed, and presumably who have spent their lives, or the part of their lives that they spent dealing with children. You know, they're done dealing with children now. But you'll notice she also evades the question. But this ain't exactly a conversation now, is it?
That don't make any sense. So now I'm the bad guy. See what I'm saying? Because I come to ask her a question, and while I was walking over here, she screams, rape, 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 help, help, rape. You see what I'm saying? This is the ignorance that we will continue to live amongst. You see what I'm saying? The problems would never change here in America until people as her learn to make changes amongst themselves.
Well, that was a nice denouement. What a country! Yeah. But it is more in Monday, and yes, there's still a challenge on the table. Steve in New York will match the next $10 that come in, and that'll make a $20 dent in the $100 challenge that remains on the evening, courtesy of A Nonny Mouse, which would then mean we'd only have $70 to go to meet the challenge. Which would be very nice, because, like I said, for the next 5 days, we're going to have to try to raise $360 a night. You know, because of my absence. But, you know, we all like to beat the Swede, don't we? You know, it's fresh, and we just can't... We just can't leave this go, as morons go. because it's too damn good. The Repig-Lickin', Clavern is well underway by now. Maybe Scott Baio's speaking. I don't know. I'm not watching it. Rats. Okay. But I mentioned Steve Cantaloupe's King at the top of the at the top of the broadcast. And it's apparently been very exciting. They had an exciting little moment early on. They tried to, you know, the conventions are, I mean, there's some parliamentary process, Robert's Rules of Order kind of business that has to go on. A little bit after 4 o'clock this afternoon, about 3 hours after the convention gaveled in, they had a vote on the approval of the rules. You know, you got to approve the rules that the convention runs by. And the Trumpanzees wanted it to go over on a voice vote. That was met with this. So the guy at the podium was Representative Steve Womack of Arkansas. And he then tried to declare that the ayes had it. And the nays shouted him down and ran him off the stage. The guy who is constantly referred to as a constitutional scholar, the senator from Utah, Mike Lee, who wouldn't know the Constitution if it was presented to him with a free urine-colored snake flag, said he didn't know what was coming next. According to the Washington Post report. Well, Womack slunk back onto the stage, called for the vote again, declared that the ayes had it, you know, the Trumpanzees. The Iowa and Colorado delegations walked out. And you know, a little bit of chaos sort of descended on the group. Then they brought Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon, mother of a woman who likes to perform in red face, onto the stage. At which point, according to the Washington Post, she talked about party unity. Yeah, well. But so far as morons, and like I said, this may be a week full of morons. No. Mm-mm. Steve Cantaloupe's King has an early lead on the week. He'll probably fade. Because there will be, I mean, the duck doofus who declared that Donald Trump has a get-out-of-jail-free card called Jesus. Well, he's speaking tonight. Danny in Baton Rouge wants to know where that video of the crazy old cranky white lady came from. Came from Daily Kos. I've already cleared it from the browser, but if you look for crazy old white lady, Daily Kos, there's probably a decent chance you'll find it. Let me see if I've still got it here. Nope, I don't. But it came from Daily Kos. And Danny also says, after some more facts or BS comes out about yesterday's shooting here, I hope to call you. I'd love to have a report. We all would love to have a report from you there. Because, you know, you're where it's real. But no, Steve Cantaloupe's king. It would be unfair to quit this here Moran Monday without offering his take on the unbearable whiteness of being, right? This is from MSNBC. Why he decided to talk to them? I don't know. I'm just glad he did.
Business, though, does get a little tired, Charlie. I mean, I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where are these contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about. Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization?
Than white people?
Than Western civilization itself, that's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America, and every place where the footprint of Christianity settled the world. That's all of Western civilization.
Dear God, he said that with Charlie Pierce sitting on the other side of the table from him. Please, God, don't let Charlie spontaneously combust. Please, God, don't let Charlie... please. Right now, he's looking like his gob has been a bit smacked.
We're not going to argue the history of Western civilization. Let me note for
the history of this country.
Let me note for the record that if you're looking at the ledger of Western civilization...
And that's where it ends. That was Chris Hayes taking him on. What brought it on was Charlie Pierce saying, it's really optimistic you can say that this is the last time that old white people will command the Republican Party's attention, its platform, its public face. That hall is wired, he continued, that hall is wired by loud, unhappy, dissatisfied white people. And that's what caused Steve Cantaloupe's king to open his mouth and stick both feet into it. This old white people business does get a little tired, Charlie. I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where are these contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about? Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization? Wow. It's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America, and every place where the footprint of Christianity settled the world. That's all of Western civilization, according to the Cantaloupe's man. Chris Hayes offered, if you're looking at the ledger of Western civilization, for every flourishing democracy, you have Hitler and Stalin as well. Yeah, Arthur, I guess. Merca is the crucible of Western civilization. Mm-hmm. You betcha. You know, because the Italians invented pasta. And the Greeks first cultivated the tomato. It always goes to food for me, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay. And let's see, some Dutch guy invented gunpowder. And alcohol? Well, we all know that the Irish were the first to discover alcohol. Wait, it was the Scots. Well, okay, distill it. right? And all that not even highfalutin math, the kind of low grade, nobody really thinks about it math, like the idea of, you know, zero. Mm-hmm. Yep, Frenchmen came up with it. And they were all Christians. Southern Baptists, as a matter of fact. But that's what he's, you know, there for. Because Steve Cantaloupe's King sent time after time after time after time to the House of Representatives by people who think just like him in Iowa. Steve Cantaloupe's King is a representative not of the far, weird, bizarre fringe elements of the radical right in this country. He's about as mainstream as you can get in the GOP. That is the normal GOP. The Trumpanzees, the real serious ones, are even weirder. And, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, they got about a 50-50 shot of running this country. Yep. Oh, see, there goes Bob. He's trying to motivate us out of fear again. It ain't fear. It's reality, brothers and sisters. Donald Trump has about a 50% chance of becoming president of the United States. And when he does, he's going to have that crazy-ass House of Representatives, of which Steve King is a senior member, to do his bidding. And he'll have Paul Eddie Munster Ryan to say, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. And if the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini yells, hop, Paul Ryan will scream froggy. And by the way, if you're planning on the Senate flipping to Democrat, I wouldn't bet the entire fate of the nation on that. Because that's another argument I hear. Oh, well, yeah, it's going to be gridlock as usual. Uh-uh. That little 4-4 deadlock in the Supreme Court will be over as quick as Donald Trump can nominate the prior from Alabama who used to put up nudies of himself on gay websites. Mm-hmm. So then it'll be Republican majority on the Supreme Court, Republican majority in the House of Representatives, Republican Senate, and the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini at the top of it all. There you go, Dogman in the chat room saying, ignorance is bliss because higher math came from the Middle East. Yeah, there's that algebra. I think it's a terrorist organization. And they've promised, with a President Trump at the helm, and this is a question, it's just a straight-up question. For the people who are willing to risk a Trump presidency, I ask this with no animus, no nothing. I just want to know one thing. Do you think he won't do what he says he'll do? Because there's only two alternatives here. Fucking binaries, we hate them, don't we? Either you think he won't do what he says he'll do, or you're okay with what he says he'll do. Now, the Trumpansies love what he says he'll do. They will line up for, you know, maybe Trump can get Mexico to pay for the concentration camps where we're going to keep the 11 million people until he can get rid of them somehow. He'll have to come up with some sort of final solution. Anybody willing to let Donald Trump become the president of the United States? A simple question. Do you not think he'll do what he has sworn up and down he'll do? Or are you just okay with it? That's all. And it really is all. It's time to get out of here. I think I'm going to... Our liquor store is already closed. I was thinking cheap tequila and a straw, but it's looking... I mean, the way this week's looking with the clavering going on and everything, I couldn't get over the hangover in time to get behind the microphone. I guess it's going to have to be the Odysseus bit for me. Lash to the mast and let Agnes stop her upper ears with beeswax, but I'll have to hear the siren song from Cleveland. All right, we wrap up in a hole. Needed to raise $360 this evening. And there's a challenge on the table that gets us another 100, which would get us close to the day's fundraising goal. We got 70 to go on that challenge. Well, we got 90 to go on that challenge. If somebody will answer Steve's challenge in New York, that'll take it down to 70. And we got $70 to go. Thanks, everybody. Gird up thy loins with the armor of the Lord. No, just lay in a ton of hockey pucks. And make sure the duct tape's still sticky. Yeah. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Whether you email or tweet or Facebook or call or just sit there. And maybe scream at me or the speakers or whatever. I thank you for the time you spend with us. Thank you to our all volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.